We're just doing some volume stuff right now, too, right? So this is Forrest Solis interviewing for Creative Push Project on December 16th at 7:15 p.m. And could you introduce yourself and tell us your age?
My name is Amanda Bird. I'm 43.
Excellent. Can you tell us your name and your age?
I'm Mary Abeda. I'm 42 years old.
Excellent. Are we good?
I think so. This is beautiful. We actually have not interviewed like sisters or people together.
Yeah, no, really. So if you could take us back to your birth, did your mother or your grandmother or anyone tell you about your births?
Or like preparing you for pregnancy?
No. Not, I mean, when your actual birth.
Oh, yeah.
When I was?
Yes. Did your parents tell you about that?
I don't think. It was funny. This actually came up with my daughter. I don't know if it was yesterday. Lynn asked, how was Lynn? My daughter is in her third year at the University of New Mexico. So she's doing a similar project like this. And so her and I have to talk about her birth. And so our birth earlier, I was trying to remember where I was born. I think we were born in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
So that I've never heard how we were born, but and that's a good question. And so, but like I said, my oldest daughter, she'll be turning 21, so she was wondering, how was I born? And so the funny part about her being born was we got pulled over on the way to the hospital. And so that was the, and my grandma was still here at the time because she's my oldest child. And so I remember, I told her, I remember having her, and my contractions started about 4 in the morning. And then I just kind of just waited because we were living, my sister and I live with my grandmother, and kind of just, should I tell her now? Should I tell her now? And, or, you know, let them know I'm ready to go. And so we went up about 6 in the morning, and we normally had our children in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And so, because that's where the Indian hospital is. And so we got in, her dad, my mom, my grandmother, and I started to go up to the hospital. This was 6 in the morning. So we were heading to Santa Fe. So maybe about a block away, we got pulled over. And then the police officer asked my boyfriend, and he said, well, why are you driving so fast? She's having a baby. And my grandma's like, you know, why are they pulling us over? You know, you're knowing that you're having a baby. So like as we were, like I said, a block away from the hospital, and we got a police escort to the hospital because I was in labor. And so I was telling my daughter that earlier. I said, you were unique. I said, I mean, we started early, but she wasn't born till 2:29 in the afternoon. And so she took a little while because she was my first.
Did you have your first before you?
No.
Is that the first?
My sister, yeah.
I did.
You had the first.
Yeah.
With the first baby in your family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yes. She had her first. Or my niece, Kiana. Yeah.
Did your mother or grandmother prepare you for birth? Did they say, this is what you're going to experience? And how do you?
I would say. I think just conversations we had with our grandmother was, you know, like how self-care, being pregnant. Culturally and just physically, how you would take care of yourself as a woman, going to make sure you went to your prenatal, taking care of yourselves, talking to your baby occasionally, and because you're connected that way,
mm-hmm.
Always knowing that that being is growing, you know, and is with you through everything, you know, no matter what's going on in your life and, you know, what you're experiencing, the child is feeling. So I think just conversations our grandma would have with us. Sometimes always saying, I remember one just off the top of my head, her saying, you know, when we started relationships, her always, you know, reminding, you know, be careful. I remember that, and I remember I got lectured for it, but I think through the years, I guess without her guidance, you know, I use her words today, mm-hmm. you know, and it means a lot to my sister and I, and so She was a large. She was our mother.
Because and our so, real mom left us.
Yeah, so our grandma was our mother.
And yeah.
So a lot of, and I'm thankful, you know, for the wisdom she shared and a lot of the things that she cautioned us at then as a teen or as a young, you know, adult. You tend to not listen. But today, I don't think we would be strong parents
if we didn't have her
advice. So, but basically, you know, it was always her, you know, reminding us, you know, and I think that's where our parenting comes from. It's not easy. It's not.
Especially, you know, women here on the Pueblo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's just, you know, certain things, you know, just us women, you know.
I guess, you know, one of the things that just being able to, I guess, cope with the fact that you're having a child. Some of our community members have children early. And I think that's kind of, I mean, I wasn't that old. I was 21 years old. Today, that's old compared to our 14 and sometimes 15 year olds mm-hmm. and younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I think the reason, in a way, speaking about our grandmother is responsibility. We tend to have been responsible early. My oldest, like I said, she didn't have to babysit her siblings. We did.
Mm-hmm.
We took on big roles as the older grandchildren. And I think if we didn't, we wouldn't be where we're at today, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so not just parenting, but also being able to be self-employed, how to self-sustain yourself.
Yeah, we were learning about that. Your husband was saying how your skills have been passed down from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
Did your grandmother, I mean, from the photographs?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, my brother's family, farming, and I'm grateful, you know, to a lot of the, a lot of how he plays a role in my son's life. We all tend to take on that parent figure. Because my children are just as much as my sister's children, and her children are just as much as mine, and so we're equally responsible for them, and that helps because of the support in parenting, because it is tough to discipline, it's tough to be able to have conversations, because this our generation of children are different from how we grew up.
Mm-hmm.
How is that support impacted your parenting, having your sister nearby? And
I mean, it's been great because I've always just had her besides my grandmother.
Yeah,
it's just her and I, although I am the oldest of six.
Yeah,
but my other siblings were not as close as her and I.
Yeah,
because our mom took those siblings with her. Yeah. And we were left with our grandmother.
Yeah.
Are you closest in age?
Yeah,
we're about just a year and a half apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and my sister, too, we were close like that. We had much younger siblings mm-hmm. And a single mother, and so we became kind of a team. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really special relationship.
And I think that's one of the, you know, that closeness. My children are 8 years apart, and I wish, I sometimes think, why did I wait that long? Because of, you know, you want to be able to have someone, but they're all, you know, in their own way, they're close. Like I said, my oldest didn't have to really babysit, and she just doesn't, you know, she's the oldest, and I think the roles that we tend to play as older siblings is where we then become responsible for the younger ones, being able to guide and being able to support. We do have two younger sisters and two younger brothers. So there's a brother behind me, two sisters, and a younger, we have a youngest brother. And so So there's a difference in our small family is small because the rest of our siblings work and go to school, and you know they're out in the urban. We're here on the reservation in the community, mm-hmm. and so it's also challenging having to educate the ones that are urban in language and culture because they're missing a part of it by not being here. Mm-hmm. So that's important. You know, I have the younger girls, they're four, and language is very important because it helps to sustain who we are, and culture, participating in our dances and being part of our ceremonies is very important. Is that it sustains who we are, but not just that. It's the strength that comes from, it's the resiliency, they say, is just like church. It creates that spirituality and the resiliency, and so that it helps to helps our children to make better choices. You know, if they're resilient, then they won't take as much risks. But then on the other side, risks are good because, you know, you're not always going to be there when they fall. And so I think a lot of what the community provides in language, culture, is important because they are going to be that next generation, after we, move on. So a lot of it is important. But you see a lot of gender roles change today. I'm a victims advocate in the community. I'm a sexual assault victims advocate.
I was asking, how have the women's roles changed, you were saying?
I think that, I think just the roles are still there, but I think that how we respect those roles are changing. Because, our one example is tattoos, for instance. It's not something that's culturally appropriate. Because as women, we play roles culturally, and who we were bearers of children. We're very special people because we're the ones that have children. And it's a very special role to have children. And some women don't. But when you bear children, it's something, it's just what a woman should do. And some don't, and that's fine. But I think what we tend not to do is educate our younger women. So we can't say it's not there, but we have to educate and share what roles, what etiquette, what's expected. If we don't share, then we can't expect from them. So a lot of it goes back to having those discussions about what's appropriate, which I know the younger generation say, oh, you guys are old-fashioned. But I think just like when we were talking about our grandmothers, that it's this where we're, expressing or teaching our children what we thought we probably wouldn't hear at the time. And so, but I mean, it's interesting when you think, well, what grandma say, or grandma help me with this because I don't know how to talk to my children right now, or how do I love them, how do I care for them, I'm struggling. And so you tend to reach out a lot. And so, but I think that just having her in our lives taught us a lot. And one, just that bond we had as her being our mother was big, yeah, played a big role.
So she was there when you were pregnant with mm-hmm, your first child.
My first, yeah.
Did you change any of your behaviors during the pregnancy? Any ways that did you start walking or eating differently or doing anything?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. I did start eating differently. We tried to walk, my boyfriend at the time, but. But I mean, the excitement, having.
So you were excited about the pregnancy?
I was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you, how soon did you know you were pregnant?
Maybe about a month. Yeah, found out right away.
So did you just miss your first period and then you knew?
Yeah, yeah. So I went and that's what it was. So I kind of threw. Yeah, I went to the doctor, got things checked out, and that's what they told me. Yeah. So I had my daughter.
How was pregnancy?
I say it was pretty good. I mean, considering it was, you know, my first time, and I tried to take care of myself. And like I said, my grandmother used to, you know, let us know, you know, you don't eat too much of that and this, but, you know. But otherwise, yeah, I try to, you know, I take care of myself.
Nowadays, I feel like, you know, with women being pregnant, there's so many things that we're afraid of, you know, about, because we know so much, you know, afraid of birth defects or afraid of, you know, things that can go wrong. Mm-hmm. Did you think about any of those things, or were you just excited about the process? And
I think I was just excited about the process. Yeah.
I think that's nice. I wish we didn't know as much as we do now to some degree, you know?
Yeah.
Because it puts so much fear in our minds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did you always know you were going to give birth in the hospital?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How far away is the hospital from where you were?
About an hour. It's about 45 minutes from here.
Yeah, to Santa Fe.
So yeah, at the time it was in Santa Fe.
That's a drive.
Yeah.
Did you have to
think
about that when you planned on...
Well, Albuquerque's further.
Albuquerque's further. But I think that, like you said, you don't want to overthink. I think culturally we're educated to not overthink, where we don't pack a bag. We go to prenatal care. We go to ultrasounds. I don't even know if I even packed a bag for when I had the twins, because it was just... for my first one, I felt the contractions. I knew my body was getting ready. My second one, I went, when my son was born, I went to work. I started my contractions. I was in labor at 6 in the morning with my son. I went to a prenatal appointment in Santa Fe in the morning with my cousin. We ate lunch. I went back to work at 1 o'clock. I was still in labor. And I clocked out. I came back after work and I told my sister, I think it's time. And this was a little after 5. I probably ended up going to the hospital about close to 7 that night. My son was born at 9:43 that night. That's how quick... You tend to, it's not a sickness. It's not something that, that in culturally we're, you know, don't get scared, or like I said, don't overthink it, or don't worry, because a lot of that stress and that worry goes to the baby. And always, like I said, talking to your children. And so the preparedness, we prepare, but we don't prepare like in the Western culture, where we don't prepare even, we don't have baby showers until the baby's born. We don't buy certain things. It used to be said that you wouldn't find out the gender, but now today you go to an ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know? And they're like, no, but, and you tend to already find out. My son, I didn't know I was having a boy. Lynn, my first daughter, Lindsay, I don't think I knew I was having a girl. But with the twins, I knew.
Did you know the sex
of
your first?
No,
there were no ultrasounds?
There was, but I told them that I didn't want to find out.
Yeah, so it goes back to culture, you know. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the culture. It's, you know, whatever, you know, God blesses you with, and, you know, your children are special, you know, and so, yeah.
Had you, with your first birth, had you had a name picked out?
No, because even that we're not allowed to. We don't name our children. We pick godparents for them.
Yeah.
And they'll name our children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're Catholic as well. So all our children are baptized, and so the godparents will name our children.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's the respect, you know. That's culture. It goes back to the culture, and so because the godparents are also supporters of our children, they're equally as we are as the parents to our children.
Yes, it goes also to show that sense of community. And mm-hmm. we were looking at the wedding photos and this idea of sponsors for mm-hmm. your wedding. Can you explain that or talk about your weddings?
Well, we choose the couple that's going to sponsor our weddings so that we make them as our parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're our parents.
To guide them as mm-hmm. a couple. As and so then you go back to extended families. And so we're all intertwined.
Yeah, the photos, there's the sponsors of the sponsors. Mm-hmm. Of so the, lovely. Yes. It's really lovely. Yes. So that, you know, just again, that embeddedness in the mm-hmm. community and having and your support network.
And it gives you that like, you said, that support network, that you know that you'll have someone to advise if, you know, you need it. And along those same lines is, it does get, you know, we do go, there. Sometimes our roads are rocky and we need someone. And then along the same lines to celebrate and to be able to support in the good and the bad times. And so the same thing with being a godparent. My brother's sister, I baptized her daughter. So I'm equally responsible, you know, to help support and advise and, you know, and do whatever it is I can to help mom. And but she's in Phoenix, so I miss her. So yeah, so but I guess, you know, along those same lines, to help support that you're not doing this. I don't think at any rate in our community you want to attempt to feel you're alone, because you will hope to have that someone in your support network to help you or to talk to. So it kind of goes along those same lines, just like siblings. You know, you wouldn't have done it if you didn't have siblings or if you didn't have cousins or people you grew up with. And so, yeah, that closeness is important, yeah. Or that togetherness. I think that's the biggest thing in our community, that togetherness, being able to, appreciate that togetherness. Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's a beautiful idea and practice.
Yeah.
When you had your first baby, since that was the first baby, you know, here, did you? I assume you had the baby vaginally and everything was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was just small. She only weighed 4'9". Yeah.
Was she early?
And she's tall.
No. He had taken me to an appointment, too. We came home. He went to go do his thing at the ranch. And then I was home with my grandma. And it was towards the evening, huh?
Oh, okay.
I usually go sit outside with my grandmother. And I couldn't sit still for some reason. And she noticed right away because my grandma was asking me, "Are you okay?" And she kind of, "Are you sure you're not, you know, is it time?" She goes, "No, I'm okay." I told her, you know. Then finally I said, no, Mom, it hurts, I told her. And then my cousin used to live with us. So then I couldn't reach him. So then my cousin drove me up to the hospital. Yeah. But.
And did your grandmother meet you there? Or were you there with your cousin?
No.
Oh,
no.
I think
grandma.
A friend went
with you? I think so. Okay. Yeah, it's Akaku. Yeah.
I think our mom was there at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, she went. But otherwise, then he came later. My daughter was born then, so.
So I assume you had the baby and then they took her out and said, "It's a girl."
Yeah, yeah. That's what it was.
What were your feelings about that?
I was happy. I mean, Yeah, it felt good to have her out now. Yeah. And yeah, just to hear the cry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was special.
What did she look like to you? I mean, do you remember her face as a baby?
Yeah, she looked like her dad. A lot.
Had you nursed or did you bottle feed?
I tried to breastfeed, but I guess I wasn't producing much. So I had, they gave me, you know how they give you the packs from the hospital. So I tried that on her and she went on the bottle.
Yeah, yeah, nursing is a challenge. I only had one breast that made milk.
One tiny one and one big one. I tried.
Well, when you have twins, that you, and when they asked me, "Are you going to breastfeed?" Are you kidding? I said, "No." I probably only tried one day at the hospital, and I couldn't do it. And I was honest, and I said, "I can't do it." Just because, and then culturally, I didn't know culturally, and then I know that breastfeeding is the best way for our children to be nourished, and it just probably was not something that, I mean, I couldn't. I think I did it with my son. I can't remember.
Yeah, but
the
you did.
Majority with... of my, I think I did it with when I had my son. I probably breastfed him a month, and then the rest of my children, all my children are bottle fed. Yeah. So, but.
So let's get back to your story. So you were police escorted to or to the hospital.
Oh yeah.
And this was with the twins?
No. This was my first child. And so so that birth wasn't that long. We got there probably about 6:30 in the morning. She was born at 2:29 in the afternoon. So she's my afternoon child. My son is my nighttime child. He was born before 10. He was actually born the day before my birthday. And so he and I almost came to have the same birthday. And so him and I... because we're Scorpios, we don't get along sometimes. So just because of our nature, I guess. The girls, gosh, I was, well, how old was I? 37 at the time, 36. I hadn't had children, like I say, all my children 8 years apart. And so when Dontrell was born, Dontrell was going to be, I think, 8, at the, getting going on 8. The girls were born in April, and so when Dontrell was turning 8, I was carrying the girls, the twins. Funny thing, same thing, going in for a routine exam. Funny thing about that is I got to see them that small. They were dots. And I remember the lady, she was from this art community. You know, she just walked in, just her eyes all like, "What?" I said, "What's wrong? What?" And she was like, "Twice." She goes, "Twice. I did the test twice. Are you pregnant?" She goes like, "Am I? You did the test." And then she says, "I saw two." And so, okay. And to react to have been told to have twins, it was amazing, I guess, in a sense. I guess I wasn't so much worried as far as, you know, like, you can't ask how did this happen then, but was just like, I remember that day, and I was waiting, and I sat there, and I was like, so what do I expect? How does that feel? One, it was also, and you know, through the months carrying them, you know, they say you're high risk. But through the months, they started to grow, having to go to exams and, you know, being able to... I never really, I guess, I took care of myself, you know, taking my vitamins, especially having twins. I went to my checkups. I didn't really, to much of an extent, watch what I ate, because I felt like everything I ate was everything they were eating. So a lot of the things the girls like to eat is what I ate already when I was carrying them. I worked all the way to the day I delivered them. And so same thing. I used to drive a long bed truck. I used to drive a 15-passenger van. I worked to the day. I worked to the days. My first one, I don't know if I worked with my first one. I can't remember. My second son, my second child, I worked. I was at work, and then I clocked out and was ready to go have my son. With the same thing with the girls, went to a prenatal exam that morning. I was at work that day. And I don't remember, some things were happening at work, and I told my coworkers, I'm going to leave you all behind. I'm not coming back tomorrow. This was, I think, a Thursday. And so, you know, I'm going to go have my girls this evening, and so I'm not coming back. I'll see you guys in 2 months or so. And so, but I think just the experience was hard. One of my daughters was, we were getting close to about, I want to say 6 months. We went to an ultrasound, and we were told one of my daughters was, the umbilical cord was wrapping around her arm. And so one of my daughters was born with Emmy-Band syndrome. Her arm didn't fully grow. And so, we call her hand, baby hand. And so she's got, digits. So the wrist, she's got her arms about this long, and her fingers and her arms didn't grow fully. And so I don't know if, I can't say how to have reacted to that, because I guess I don't know what other people would have expected to have her be perfect. Knowing that, you know, that we had to understand, but she came to this world, and she goes to school. They've been going to school for ever since they were 3 months old, because I went back to work. If I didn't send them to school, especially Katie is the one that has the amniotic band syndrome, I don't think she completely adjusted well. A lot of people have suggested us to get a prosthetic, but I don't think it's necessary, because we accept her fully. She's a whole child to us, and especially twins have a powerful nature in our culture. And so, and there isn't anything at 4 years old she can't do that a whatever you call a normal child does. And so, but I think that was in a way shocking, but in a way, you know, what could we have done? You know, what did we do? But then it goes back to genetics. It goes back to all these things, DNA, whatever. And so, but we knew, you know, her dad and I knew, and I can't remember if I told my family, but she came into this world. And she's here with us now. And so, you know, seeing her dance today and, you know, the things she can do, there isn't anything she can't do. I guess I'm just worried more about the world and people and how they accept her. But she's much, you know, she's happy. So, but it's just hard to... And the kids she goes to school with, you know, they, kids in their own way tend to always understand more than us as adults. And so that's what the kids call her. Her arm is her, they call her baby hand. And that's what she calls her baby hand. And she'll hug you. She can feel with her digits. So she'll rub your face. And she'll, you know, she's a loving child. And so my experience with that was, it was hard, but you know, I guess in my way we accepted her from that, you know, from the beginning, and I'm sure there might have been something they could have done, but why, I say, what you know, why do we have to, you know, she didn't come. She did come with 10 fingers, 10 toes. And maybe not to everybody that's that obvious. But to us, she did come that way. And so, and like I said, I can't really say whether it was genetics or if it was what it was. But there really was no point in trying to find out because, you know, irregardless of whatever facts, you know, we accepted her. And it's the same thing God sent her to us that way. And maybe to us it's something, well, let's see how they'll take care of her. Will they take care of her or will they push her away? But Katie is so special. Katie just, she loves to draw. She loves to color. She's a little more down to earth than the other twin. The other twin, she's wild, but I guess in our own way, you wouldn't have it any other way. If your kids don't drive you crazy, then you're not happy. if you wouldn't have the uniqueness of all of them around you, that life wouldn't be the same. And so, but I think that was probably the hardest pregnancy I've ever had. Was with my twins. My first two were they were vaginally born, but with the girls, because I was a high risk pregnancy, plus Katie didn't turn, so she was high, and she was breech. Casey was low, and you know, in that position, but Katie, she just never wanted to turn. And I think it was about 27 weeks. Once she turned. And then went back the week later. I'm not doing this, you know. I'm not turning, you know. And even to the point when we had ultrasound, she would never let them take her picture. But the funny thing, when I watch them sleep at night, is I see their nose. I remember her little button nose and just that little round, the silhouette of her first side face. And Casey is almost similar, but Katie was always the one that hide. She would hide and she would turn and, you know, she would always like trick everybody. But so with the twins, I had a C-section. Wasn't the greatest experience because I assume they watched. You know, once you're sedated or once you're numb, I guess you watch. I didn't have that experience because I was taken in to have the girls. I was dilated, but I knew I was having a C-section anyway. I knew I was having a vaginal birth. But, and this was like 2 in the morning, because it went really, apparently it went really quick, but I don't remember. But what really traumatizes me even today is they numbed my body. But they cut me before I was numb. And they cut me twice. And I was telling my boyfriend, tell them I'm not numb. Don't tell them to cut me anymore. Because I remember they cut me on this side. And then my body wasn't numb yet. Then they finally had to sedate me. And then he had to leave the room. And then I asked, and I even, you know, some days the trauma comes back. Because I didn't know what happened. And then I asked my boyfriend, were you in there? He goes, no, I had to leave because they told me. And so it's kind of a little bit of a void that I don't know. I've been kind of curious to go and ask to see my file, what happened, how my girls were born. Because it really is, it weighs on me. Because it was the hardest experience I ever had. Was feeling that and not, you know, experience it at all. But they were born healthy. And so I think Casey was a little smaller. She was about almost 5, and Katie was close to being 6 pounds. So, and I probably would have made it to 40 weeks if my coworkers didn't make me mad. And I was 37 weeks with twins. And it was probably the biggest I ever got. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, I just grew in like 3 weeks in all the time that I was carrying them. And but I think that was probably the hardest thing was, and I don't know how it is for other women that have had C-sections, whether it's traumatizing. And it was for me, you know, if I had my way, I would have had them vaginally, but that's just not the way it went. But, and I think about it and I say, you know, it could have come down to where I could have sued the hospital because of malpractice. I wasn't ready or my body wasn't ready. So for me, I think that that's kind of a little bit of, it could just my mental health is kind of, you know, I think of it sometimes, but then I say, you know, well, they're healthy. They're, you know, four now. And, but I think just the trauma, you know, the trauma, even just trauma of having a vaginal birth is sometimes that way. So it was just the hardest for me. And so I think it's just something that comes back sometimes and I think about it. But I also think, you know, what other woman has experienced the same thing I did. And so, and was the hospital known for that? Because it is scary. I thought I was, you know, the only thing I remember was, my girls were born at 2:57 and 2:58 in the morning. And that was probably about 45 minutes later after and so I always feel like, you know, I missed 45 minutes of my life. And where did it go? And I don't know what was going on or what happened to me. So it's something that I think of, but something I know I have to let go because my girls are fine, they're healthy. And so, but I just remember being wheeled down the hall back to my room and the girls were there. And I remember carrying the girls and just that, you know, and just, you know, just having them there. I remember bathing them in, because they're so small, in those little yellow, those pants, those bed pants.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember Casey was so small, she would take baths. And the second day they were born, the first day they were born, you know, they just kind of washed them off. So ever since the second day, we started giving them baths. And ever since then, always, you know, made it necessary. But they were so tiny. And I remember Casey came, we always tell her, you came home in a pan, I told her, because she had the little car seat where she was, because she had to go in the little car, because it was like I said, like a pan. And then Katie was the one that came home in the car seat, because Casey was too small. So they wouldn't let them bring her home, let us bring her home, until she was able to fit in a car seat properly. So Casey came home with this. It was interesting. Like a cake pan also. And so, but even that experience, as small as she was, we had to keep her in the ICU unit because I think she got scared with the harness. And so we were on our third day. We were going to come home the third day of our hospital stay. But because Casey's oxygen level was dropping, they didn't want us to bring her home. Even though the hospital said, you can leave her. And they're like, no, we're not going to leave her, you know. And so we'll see how she does tomorrow. So we went on to a fourth day. I'd rather take them both home at the same time, not leave one. And, you know, because they're going to miss one another. So Casey went for one evening to ICU. So then the following morning, they checked her out, strapped her back in, and she did better. So we came home. And so one of my other relatives was talking about pictures that they had on their baby shower, because we have cradle boards. So they were both in two cradle boards. Oh. Yeah, it was because we have cradle boards for our children. And so they're saying, I remember when the girls, it's their babysitter across the street. She has pictures of the girls when they're in their cradle boards. And they were strapped in. And I remember they had two little bassinets and two of everything. And as we still continue two of everything today. But, I think it was a unique experience, a very unique experience for me.
We were talking to a woman earlier today who said that after, when she decided she didn't want any more children, she dismantled the cradle board.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, wow!
So there's nothing, you guys left your, you still have your cradle board?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
I think that's going overboard if we do that.
Well,
she really did not want another child.
Well, I think the and then that's why I'm saying things change, because there's a whole purpose to the cradle board, because it's another step to the child growing, because they're used to being this way, because then they say like their joints are growing, yeah, like key butts, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and they're like, they can't do this yet because they're used to being this way. So we're if that was one of the things that I think I learned from my grandmother, was to put them back down, was to put their arms back in, and put they do that now, and it's interesting and to see that, because it's something we were always told to do, is to put them back in. Mm-hmm. Put them back down, meaning put their arms back in, because they're used to that position and they'll sleep better. And so like with the cradle board, we covered them back up. It's just like being back in the womb, because that's where they were the last 9 months. They're not used to all this, you know. Although, like I said, we don't do that as much, you know. I can't carry a baby that, it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do, because they're not, it's on, it's like, mm-hmm. It's hard for me to, because it's like, I don't know what to do with them, because I don't want them to fall over.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You have the girls' pictures?
Who made that?
That's our nephew. This is actually a Navajo cradle board, because on his side of the family, they have the Navajo. But ours, it's similar. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my little neck. You should have seen him squirming.
Yeah. And that's how they're put down. Yeah.
Who makes the cradle boards in the family?
The fathers.
The father is the one that makes them.
So is that a skill that's passed down?
Yeah. My father has to provide that.
Did your father teach you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's both father and son making the cradle board.
And you will teach your son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hopefully.
Not yet. Not yet. Not those two.
It's interesting because, you know, Western culture, you swaddle. And it's the same kind of idea, right?
Yeah. I don't know if the swaddling is a new generation thing or an old generation thing, but I feel like it's fairly new still with, you know, in more urban areas that the swaddling is like a new thing.
But that makes so much sense. So do you feel like it's some sort of way of helping the baby transition from the womb to the...
Well, they tend to say it's a way of calmness. It's almost already teaching them like tolerance, to calming them. And that it's just being on the outside world, you know, and... Yeah, it's a miracle. Mm-hmm. So to teach them to be calm, mm-hmm. to sleep better.
Yeah.
And I often wonder, all my children are night sleepers. My girls, I knew 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay, girls, are you awake? And even when they were born, they were early risers. And so they kept the same schedule. And which was good, because they went to school. Today, I don't know. Some days they don't get up right away, but that's why when I hear other people talk about, I can't get them to bed. And I think one of the things that you have to do, which sometimes isn't something we tend to do, is structure, is being able to, because I worked, get off at 5, 5 to 10 is our, 5 to 6 we eat, 7 to 8 we have bath time. Then 8 to 10 is just bringing them back down. And it's something that I remember my grandma would say is, don't work them up. Mm-hmm. Put them to bed when they're calm and they'll go to bed. My two, some nights, they want to watch TV all night. We just came from, my sister didn't go in. Their toys are all over the, Santa came yesterday. So they got cash registers and a basket of a whole bunch of stuff, just grocery stuff. And so they're all over the place. I saw a whole bunch of hot dogs laying by the chimney, and everything's all over the place. So, but it's just something to be a parent. It's not easy. I mean, I never, these two girls, oh God, some days. And I'm thankful I have babysitters. My mom just retired, so I think she's barely learning in a way to be a grandma, because she didn't raise, right? Mm-hmm. Like, our kids are really not close to her. They're probably more close to my brother's family. Mm-hmm. And so the same thing, my girls are more closer to their dad's grandma. Because my mom worked, so she's barely learning to reacquaint herself, I think. Yeah. So.
How old was she when she finally retired?
She's 62 now, so she retired this year. And I said, are you serious? You know, because my mom always worked. And so that's how we were raised by our grandmother. But I think I wouldn't have had it any other way. Because if that was the choice she had to make, then that's the choice she made.
So you're in touch with your mom.
Yeah, I live with my mom. She came back. Yeah, she came back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is, I don't know how many years it's been, but I live with her now as an adult, so she knows what I'm talking about. I think it's harder to be an adult child of a parent that didn't see you grow up, and now having to be a parent and raise your own family with. So it's hard. It's hard for me because, you know, grandma worked and now grandma is learning to be a grandma. And that's hard. But yet we're adults and we have to make decisions how we're going to raise our children. And then you tend to disagree. And I think as a parent, you have to stand and say, you know what, Mom? I'm the parent. You're the grandma. Okay, got it, good, okay, great. And so a lot of that, it is hard, and I tend to tell my sister, it's hard having to be an adult child with her, especially not having that closeness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people to this day think we're all sisters, my aunt, my mom, and my sister. Mm-hmm. And I. And so we're like, no, she's our mother. I thought your grandma was your mother. No, or like, so there's a lot of challenges, and but because we're all sometimes tend to raise our families in extended family homes, it does get hard. And so you have to make a choice whether, you know, you want advice, and then you have to be an adult and say, you know, I appreciate it, but not right now, okay? Let me deal with them how I want to deal with them, because they are my children and I am going to have to deal with them. And so, but I'm thankful I have two babysitters. Well, one now, but the girls went to school at 3 months old, and I'm thankful to my neighbors. They were my girls' babysitters at 3 months old. There isn't anything one of the babysitters would do for my girls. They're more attached to her than my mom.
Mm-hmm. See?
So.
Did you have sitters too? Or no. How did you cope with your young kids?
I took them to Old Town.
They were the business ladies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's how we were raised.
Under the table there.
We were raised that way. And
I was fortunate.
Yeah.
That I didn't work. Well, I worked. Well, I made jewelry with my grandmother. Yeah. So I took him with me to Old Town. I had him with me all the time. If not, you know, he would take him too sometimes. But otherwise, yeah, I would have him there with me. All of my kids.
Yeah. And now they're learning the same skills. And are they going to eventually take over?
Raya Studio.
I don't know.
That's why I'm saying no.
I guess not.
It's never gonna be out there.
But I enjoy what I do over there. I mean, that's all I've known all my life, doing that.
Yeah.
Although, you know, at times I wonder, what if I would have gone back to school, things like that. But after our grandfather died, I grew up quick because I had to learn how to drive. I had to learn how to drive to my grandmother around, and I start taking her to Old Town. Because prior to that, it would be my grandfather and I to go sell. But after he was gone, then, yeah, I started taking my grandmother.
How old were you?
I was barely starting high school when he
Grandpa
passed. Yeah,
because I remember we went to school at the ending school, and so it's ninth grade or 10th grade. I was in ninth grade, I think. Yeah. We used to go to a boarding school, and so that's kind of the reason why we had to grow up quick. We just had to, I guess, and so.
Our understandings of the boarding school was that in the past, they were meant to kind of assimilate, you know, and to strip away culture and to really were, you know, had kind of terrible connotations. But when that you actually, went, it wasn't so much.
That actually, I think that was, those are different areas. Like if you want to talk about Carlisle Indian School, those and the locations. Carlisle is in Pennsylvania, right? So there were different, because when New Mexico's actually settled, you know, it came from the east. We were in the southwest, you know. Some of the relocation happened as far as the Midwest, you know. And so, like, you hear, we have Choctaw people that were living in Mississippi but were relocated to Oklahoma. And so I don't think a lot of that assimilation really affected us in the Pueblos, especially because we also were under, before New Mexico became a state, we were under Spanish. That's how we were kept Catholics. So we had day schools. We already had day schools on the reservation. Mm-hmm. So later on, I think then there used to be a Catholic school in Santa Fe called St. Catherine's. And then Santa Fe Indian School was actually an Albuquerque Indian school. So, and so I honestly don't think that. I mean, there's historical trauma at any rate, however you see it. But I don't think that as a Pueblo person, historical trauma really, we have our own historical trauma, I'll say it that way. But not, I don't think, as an effect of, as a, you know, as how we were affected by boarding schools. We weren't assimilated that way because they still spoke their language, as far as what I know. And some of the people I've worked with in the community have it's interesting experiences that they used to run away from Santa Fe and come home. Then their parents would send them back and they're like, you got to go back to school. And I'm really, really proud of some of the people in our community going off to college, older people. And so it was supportive, I think, you know, and education is our key, you know. I mean, both, we're always taught to live in both worlds, our own culture and outside Western culture. So, I mean, I don't think that's the type of assimilation that happened here, because we had day schools. So somehow education was embraced and not detrimental to our people. And so I think that's just the way it is today. And so, but
is that difficult at times, balancing those two worlds, you know? No. Or just feels natural?
Not really. No, I don't think it, unless if you want to be radical about it, you know, and think, you know, and hate the white government, do as much as you want. I don't care. but I think one of the things is that we are citizens of this country. No matter what color or where you immigrated from, nobody's. I mean, we're the true native people. We came here. We lived here. Our people are from here. Everyone else, yes, came to, you know. But I've never been taught to hate, you know, any race, because that's the same thing. Because then we grew up around people in Old Town, and so we're not so hard to talk with. Meaning, hi, you know, how you doing? And then it didn't matter whether you were black, Hispanic, white, white. We were always taught that, you know, that people were people. And so I don't think that really, I don't know. I just never grew up that way. I never grew up having to feel that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
In terms of that balance, though, you know, things that are customary for you, like not naming your child, was that a challenge in the hospital setting? Like saying, I'm not going to write a name down on this.
No, the hospitals understood, right?
At time, yeah, but now it's different.
The last one, the last time I had the girls, they were still baby girl beta, A and B. They were A and B. So we weren't pressured because... The other thing, depends on which hospital you go to, but it also goes back to educating cultural competency. You have to, I mean, even though somebody, that's an old custom, they don't do that anymore. And but that's also our respect for our culture, is that we give that respect. And then some of the godparents I hear go down, right? They name the children there.
Yeah.
But for those of us, you know, we and they ask you, because when the girls were born, do you have names for the girls? Or like, or are they? And then they also had native providers. So the lady I spoke with, I think she was from another pueblo, so she understood. You probably won't name your girls. She's like, no, we probably won't. So when they came, okay. So then it was cute. They had little bands on their toes, and then on their arms, because nowadays they put those they're like chipped, so that because they steal babies. Because I remember the girls, oh gosh, they had these little bands. Yeah.
Oh.
And then the alarm will go off.
Oh.
And so they were like, they had bands where at the hospital we were. So if somebody removed them or took them out of the hospital, the alarm will go off because they had to be removed before we brought them home. And so, but the hospital we were at, they were culturally friendly. And the same thing with the Santa Fe Indian Hospital, their culture. And I think just the state in general, they know, like, at vital statistics, the birth certificate or the, I guess, the paternity comes later once the names are given. And so, but I just think, I guess everyone, every case is different nowadays. It's not customary to what, you know, what we're told anymore, I guess. So,
do you think your girls will carry on these traditions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will. I hope they will. I mean, if we're still around, we know they will. Because I think it's important, as much as my nephew and my son, to be good fathers and to be good mothers. Because that's I hope to say we've guide them enough to fulfill those roles. So, you know.
I'm really fascinated with this naming process because I couldn't imagine letting my mother name my son. Like, there's something about that. But so do the names have any significance, or where do they come from?
We've been asked, Hatskara, we have 10.
Two.
We have 11 god children.
Yeah.
We have 10 girls we've named, and we have one boy. So we have 7.
And one coming on the way of her in January. Yeah.
Yeah, and more. But we take turns naming. Sometimes I'll do, like, the first name. He'll pick a middle name. I mean, we both.
But do you consult with the parents? Like,
No.
It's what your child is named. Because we think they're, not we think, they're going to be blessed. You know, and we give that support back to the godparents because they're going to guide.
Mm-hmm. So it's a really special thing around here when you're asked to be godparents.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a huge decision then. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's an honor.
Well, if you think about it, when you ask someone to be a godparent, the name that they give is probably ranks not very high on, you know what I mean?
That's, yes.
There's bigger responsibilities involved in that than just the name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then my girls are, one of the girls, Casey, the one with the short hair, she's, her middle name, she's named after our grandmother. Her name's Tonita. And then Katie's named after my grandmother's sister. Her name's Louisa. So my godmother's mother told our godmother to name them, rename them that, because Skomai's mom told her to, you should name them Tonita, and so then she put them as their middle names. So Casey and Katie are their first names. Then they have the names of the sisters, my grandma and her sister. Mm-hmm. And so, but it fits them well. They have the demeanor of both women. And my first one, she's named after our grandmother. It's so cute when she sleeps. Mm-hmm. She sleeps just like this, and just sleep. And so that's how that's how my grandma used to sleep, with her arms folded. Or tell me a bedtime story. Or she likes to kiss at night, Katie. Mm-hmm. Casey likes to kiss. And then I remember that was one of the biggest things, is having grandma give you the sign of the cross and tell you good night. And that's how I think it was special for us.
We used to sleep with her.
Yeah, we used to. Grandma. Oh, yeah. And I think that was like the specialest thing that I always remember.
Yeah.
Is her and going to bed and having grandma, having that safety, mm-hmm. and knowing she was there. And, you know, and it's hard. I mean, it's hard too. And I hope that, you know, that that's the kind of relationship that my mom builds with my girls. Although she's learning, you know, she's learning to do that. But I think it's just something special, especially women, any woman that gives you advice, how to be a parent, how to be a woman, how to be a wife, how to be a mother in this community. And because we play a lot of different roles. And so we also have, our children are also given Indian names, so they're not just giving out, you know, Western names. They're also giving, so it's unique. They're all, our children have a uniqueness of the names they're given, and sometimes who they come back as. And so, I mean, people talk about reincarnation. They come back. You know, we all come back as different who's lived before. So it's really an amazing thing when you begin to see, distinguish between your children. And so, yeah.
How many names do they have?
My girls have two names. Okay. So first name and a second name.
No, in terms of their Indian names, you were saying.
Two? Yeah. My girls have two. We probably have two, too. So, yeah.
Mm.
We're named after a time where we're born. Yeah. Depending on whoever names you.
Is that why you mentioned that you had a nighttime child and a morning child? Is that tied into that?
No, it doesn't really. No, it just all depends on what they're named. But it's just the same thing in distinguishment. You know, in distinguishment, kind of acknowledgement, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was your second birth different than your first birth at all?
A little bit, yeah. That'll Raya be my middle big. Child there.
Raya was bigger.
She was bigger, yeah.
How big?
My first one was 4'9", so Mariah was like 6-some. Yeah, and totally opposites. You know, totally different. She's the rebellious one. And then my son was my surprise. Yeah, because I had a tubal pregnancy, and I had lost a son. So maybe after that, within that year, I got pregnant again. I was surprised. I even had the nurse do a second test. I said, "Are you sure?" "Yeah, look." So I was happy. But I didn't know it was a son till he was born. Yeah.
That seems very special.
It is. Yeah. We were so happy. I know he was. Yeah, he was there this time, so we got to see my son born.
That's it. No more.
How was that?
We're all done, right? Yeah.
I know. Tell me about it. So how was, did your son sit any differently in your belly? Because sometimes they say boys carry high or low. I can't remember. And
he was just more active at night. During the day, I guess he was sleeping, but at night, more active. And then when we came from the hospital, he would like to watch TV at night.
He didn't cry or anything, so he would be in his little bassinet, and he'd be just looking at the TV. Yeah, he was still, you know, he didn't change much, but now he's...
So were you able to have all of them vaginally in the hospital with no medication?
Yeah, I had them all vaginally. I think Kenny had to have medication because he was my largest. He was like seven some. Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, I had them all.
That's incredible. You guys are so strong. Going through that. I mean, yeah. I think that's
But we're blessed to have sons. And I think that's the uniqueness. And my son was just messaging me, Facebook messaging me. Where did you guys go? I didn't tell him we were coming because he's very close to Kenny or my nephew. And he's going to say, you didn't tell me. You didn't. But I think it's just, it's amazing, you know, having sisters and having boys. And I think, you know, my sister will probably agree is they're surrounded by all of us. And there's lots of hope for the both of them and who they're going to become. And like I said, I hope that, you know, that they'll be good fathers one day. And that that we've given them enough support. And, you know, that we love them. We love them. There isn't, I mean, anything, you know, you think about all the kids. And Kenny and Donnie are unique. Dontrell, and yeah, they're unique.
Kenny's really close with his cousin.
Yeah.
That's, I think, only because the son I lost would have been her son's age.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
Kenny's a year behind. Yeah. But he's really close with his cousin.
But I think her son took, my son took her son's trait, you know, and he's here. He's here through Dontrell. And so, and you tell my brother, he's as much as your son, you're responsible too for him, to teach him things. And it was hard, you know, to have to go through. I mean, it's something I think that we don't talk about the trauma sometimes because it's hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
But in time, we let go. But we know our children continue to live through our other children. And so, and talking about it helps. And knowing that, that, you know, that it is, they are special. And yeah, we can't change things, but we have to, you know, we live on. And so that I think that's just the uniqueness of the boys, that they're special in their own way. And so, but they're surrounded by sisters that will support them later on. And that's great. I mean, I'm so happy, you know, for both of them, that they have sisters that are going to be there for them. So,
with the tubal pregnancy, did you have to have surgery?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that's what it was until, yeah. I just had, like, excruciating pain in here, and I didn't know, and so they took me to the hospital. They didn't tell me anything right away either until they did, well, let's do an ultrasound. They asked me if I was pregnant, not that I know of, and that's what they found. So all I remember was, yeah, going into surgery, and then that was that, yeah.
Did you feel a loss, or was it, did you not, because you didn't have time to, like, really process that you had been carrying a child, what was that emotional experience after that?
I think it was only till I found out that it was then, yeah, of course I felt a loss, but otherwise I didn't know that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but they told me it was a boy. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you were pregnant with your son at that time?
She already...
Don.
You didn't have him yet.
I didn't have Dontrell yet.
This
was maybe, was that like a couple weeks before? Donnie was... Because when I was having Dontrell, you couldn't go with me.
Remember? Yeah, I was home.
Yeah, she was home at the time. Mm-hmm. And so when I was having Dontrell, I remember she couldn't go because she was still resting. And then I know they went in the ambulance. And so, but it was something, you know, it was hard. And today we still, like I said, he lives through Don Trail. And so, and you know, and you think, you know, what he could have been like. And he's here. It's hard. And I know my sister, you know, thinks, but I tend to believe that he does live through my son. And just like he's my son, he's her son.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he's really close with Kenny. And I wouldn't have it any other way that they both be close. And I'm glad they are. And they're still boys, they're still kids. They play together, they come up, you know, and
yeah.
They hang out. And like I said, I didn't tell my son I was coming up here.
He
was
He'll get be mad at her.
Yeah, because he hasn't come to see Kenny in a while because they've been at school. But
only, what, most, all summer they
all
hung
summer
out.
They
yeah.
hang out. And,
well, you have a beautiful family. And I've never heard children play together so nicely.
It's so lovely.
It's incredible to hear that giggling and all of that. Yeah.
And the girls,
well, they like Kenny. Well, it's yeah. the same. That's their brother, too. So.
Yeah. It's nice, you know. I mean, no matter how I guess, messy your house is, I mean, you wouldn't have it any other way because, I mean, it's the uniqueness of the kids. And it's just funny. I just heard that conversation. I was in Palm Springs last week, and this man and this young girl were sitting in front of me. And so she was talking about her three-year-old, and this man was a little bit older. And then he also, you know, they were talking, and I guess I was listening. And then she told him, well, I have a three-year-old, and... Oh, he's a brat, or she's a brat, I think she said. Huh? He goes, she's a brat, you know. And then he kind of paused for a moment. Well, if she wasn't a brat, you wouldn't be happy, right? And so I was like, oh, exactly. I sat there and I was like, of course. My girls, they didn't drive me nuts. I mean, you know, some days, and they're like, I wonder what they're doing at school. I hope they're behaving. And I understood what he said, and I said, you're exactly right. If it wasn't for this chaos we some tend to take on every day as a parent or whatever role you play every day, you wouldn't learn to appreciate just living, and you wouldn't learn to appreciate your children, and one day they leave, and you're like, you know, what are you doing? And my biggest thing with my oldest, did you eat today? And so she's home. She came home yesterday, and she was just, we went grocery shopping. I thought, I'm so looking forward to eating at home, she said. Because she lives with my sister. Well, what do you guys do? You don't cook. And when I go to visit them, I open their fridge. Where's your food? And they're like, what food? And they're like, you guys don't cook, I said. And so I'm glad she's home. I mean, I just want to always make sure as old as she gets, and I worry about my niece, and she's living in town, and I'm like, I wonder she ate today. And
it's
like
our oldest.
Yeah.
Just moved out a month ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. She comes home one evening and goes, I have something to tell you. And we're all sitting around because we're all used to each other. We watch TV together, eat together. And then she comes out and she goes, something. I said, I hope it's, you know, in my mind, it's something good, you know. And she goes, I'm moving now. I said, oh, okay. I thought it was something, you know. So.
I think she was waiting for you to be a grandma.
At first, I was like, I kind of felt, and well, I feel sad, you know, because she's not here. Because I'm used to, you know, having all my kids here. I wasn't that lucky to grow up with a mom and dad.
Yeah.
So that's why I tell my kids, you're lucky you have both of us here.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have that. We had our grandparents, which was just as good, but, you know, they're very lucky. So
it's a different sort of bond.
Mm-hmm.
I was crying. I was at the dentist and I saw her. I saw her at Walmart when that day she moved.
Oh.
And when I saw them, and I saw them at Walmart, and then I saw my niece. And then she goes, I live down the street. Where down the street? down here. And then I didn't take enough time to process it because we were walking out. I saw a couple of days later at the dentist because my daughter has braces and she has braces. So she was there and I told my daughter, I think Kiana's here. And she goes, where are her cars parked out there? So she was inside. So I was sitting there. Maybe she'll come out when Lindsay goes in. And she goes, and I was sitting there and I told her, you know, and she came out. Come here, sit down. Let's talk for a moment. I told her, you didn't give me enough time to process you moving out. I said, she's all, what? She goes, I've been all week. I was just, Kiana moved out. And then I'll forget about, Kiana moved out. Kiana moved out. And it's like, it was so hard for me because my daughter went off to college and leaving her at the dorm was hard. And now she lives with my sisters. That I still think that's hard because I worry if they're eating or they're okay, you know, that they're meeting each other's needs. And so I told Kiana to come sit with me. As I was crying at the dentist's office, all like, well, don't forget about us. Come home often. And I said, you're lucky. You know, I told her, make sure, you know, like, do, you know, be responsible and, you know, we are lucky and your mom and dad trust you. Don't make the wrong decisions, you know. And so I said, come home. Don't forget about us. We're always be here. And it was hard on me. And I just, like, it's so funny. Like, some old lady I felt. I feel like an old lady. I told her, she's like, why? She goes, because it's hard to let you guys go. I mean, I know you're responsible. And I know I think you've proved enough, you know, to be where you're at. But and then I said, but it's so amazing to me. But then I was like, why do you have to go? It's like, you know,
I know.
I was just like, I was crying at the dentist's office, and it's probably a moment she'll remember. It's like, you were crying at the dentist's office, and then my daughter came out. And she, Kiana had already left. And she goes, what's wrong with you? She goes, I was sitting here crying because Kiana moved out.
Well, there's mixed emotions, right? You're happy.
I had those, like, you know, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. But I'm still like, I don't know why you had to go. And so, but my daughter was like, Mom, you're crazy. And she's like, well, I mean, I just don't, I see how you all are growing up. But I also, you know, the world is so different today. And that's what scares me the most, is the world and how it's cruel sometimes and all these things happening. But I told her, just hope, we're just always going to hope for the best every day and that you guys are safe. Because, like, my oldest, she'll ride the bus across town to school. And I'll call her. If I'm in town, do you want me to pick you up? She goes, yeah. What time you get out? And so I always have to drive her home. But I always tell her, make sure you're okay. You know, I have, like I said, three siblings that live in town, but just so that, you know, she's safe. And that's probably the biggest thing that I'm more scared of is one, her safety. But making sure that, you know, she's okay. Like I said, eating, that's the biggest thing, I guess. But taking care of herself, I guess.
And you both are such loving parents. It's really been wonderful talking with you.
Thank you. I hope so sometimes. last week, the girls are saying, I hope you liked your vacation when I came back. I went to a conference.
Oh, what vacation?
I think you Casey went on said
vacation.
That.
They're like, what vacation? Oh, you mean, and even leaving them. The first time I went on a 3-day conference, 3 hours from here, it was hard. That was the first time I had to leave the twins. I was just, I didn't know what to do the first day. And I sat there and I'm like, okay, I'll get over it. They'll be all right. 3 days. And it was 3 hours away from here. So this time around, I went for almost a week. And I told them, you know, that I'm going to go, you know, and you guys will be okay. I didn't tell them right away. I told them like 2 days before because I didn't want them to over-dramatize because Casey, I think, already knew. Because then I told them, Mom, when are you coming back? She goes like, "And are you going to work? Yes, I'm going to work. But are you coming back? She's all, I'll be back, but a couple days. And so, but it's hard. It was hard, I mean, for me to leave them, knowing that I knew I had people that will that will take care of them. But it's just a difference when mom takes care of them, because mom keeps everything in line. And when other people fill in, they're like, mom don't do it that way. You know, mom won't let me, you know, wear that, you know. And so that's what I probably worried about the most was, you know, was how they were going to be, how everybody else was going to situate themselves. So, but, yeah.
We better get out of your hair. Yeah, you guys have to wrap up for the evening. These kids are...
Mama Katie carries her milk with her baby hat.
Yeah, she does.
Okay, yes. I'm going to turn this off.
She will soon.
Okay. Yeah.